the sweep and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming. Every Sunday at this hour, WMCA, in cooperation with the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, brings you a series of vivid programs on American life, based on Roy Ottley's prize-winning book, New World A-Coming, produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. Today, we present Roy Ottley's dramatization of Negroes and Housing, starring Frederick O'Neill, Muriel Smith, and as narrator, Alex Scorby. During the past year, New World A-Coming has won four major awards from distinguished organizations. The National Conference of Christians and Jews, Radio Cues, the Newspaper Guild, and Writers' War Board. Today, we are honored to receive another award, this time from the Schomburg Collection of Negro Literature of the New York Public Library. Dr. Lawrence D. Reddick, Curator. We present Dr. Reddick.
Each year, the Schomburg Collection of Negro Literature of the New York Public Library conducts a nationwide poll. The purpose of this poll is to determine from the consensus of opinion those Americans who have done the most for the improvement of race relations in terms of full democracy. It is significant that one radio broadcasting station won a place on this roll of honor of this poll. Generally speaking, radio does not have a good record in the field of race relations. For example, a survey published last year of the treatment of Negro character by radio revealed that the pattern corresponded to the stereotype conception of the Negro. There were the happy-go-lucky servants, the brutish savages, the outlandish clowns, and on the good side, of course, the spiritual singers and the jazz musicians. There were not the information experts or the quiz youngsters. There were crap shooting, gin drinking, razor toting, and the inevitable Negro jokes. There were not the heroes and heroines, the brave, the wise, and the beautiful Negro characters as of others. But what makes the achievement of this particular citation of the honor roll noteworthy is that this radio station assumes its responsibility positively for improving race relations in our society by utilizing its facilities for exposing social evil and interpreting what is socially good. And of all this, it is accomplished without sacrificing the entertainment content of its presentations. It is indeed a demonstration that this great instrument for the communication of ideas, information, and fun may yet be won completely to the side of democracy. Accordingly, it is a pleasure for me, on behalf of the Schomburg Collection of Negro Literature of the New York Public Library, to present to you, Mr. Nathan Strauss, this scroll for the Honor Roll of Race Relations, which reads, to WMCA, for presenting each Sunday, New World A-Coming, the most forthright dramatization of Negro life and race relations on the air today.
For station WMCA, I want to express our sincere thanks to you, sir, and to the Schomburg Collection of Negro Literature of the New York Public Library for this citation. The purposes which animated all of us connected with New World A-Coming in launching and producing the program have been so well summarized by you, Dr. Reddick, that I can only say, Amen. In accepting this tribute to WMCA, it is just that those who have participated in the creation of the program should share in the honor of the award. Therefore, I would like publicly to acknowledge our indebtedness to the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, and especially to Mrs. Dorothy Norman of that committee, to Roy Ottley, the author of the book which gave the program its name, to Mitchell Grayson, who has produced and directed the program from its inception, and to all the stars of stage and screen who have generously contributed toward making each program a beautiful and moving one. We at WMCA pledge you our solemn word to continue to work toward the better new world a-coming.
Thank you, Mr. Strauss and Dr. Reddick. And now, the story of Negroes and housing.
The nation is fighting a war against fascism.
But we still have ghettos in America. The symbol of ghetto life in the United States is the black belt in any community. New York's black belt is Harlem. Here, almost 500,000 Negroes live within 2 square miles. On one street alone exist 4,000 men, women, and children, crammed into a handful of tenements. Some even live in basement dungeons. How did the black belts come about? And what can we do about them? Back at the turn of the century, New York's black belt was situated in Midtown. It was a dismal area wedged between the notorious Tenderloin and San Juan Hill section. Life was dangerous, hand-to-mouth, and dog-eat-dog. Negro clergymen attempted to combat these conditions, but gospel bombardment failed. So finally, Reverend A. Clayton Powell of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, heading a group of clergymen, went to see the mayor.
Yes, gentlemen. Mr. Powell, what do you have to say?
Mayor Gaynor, the plight of our people is desperate. They're jobless. Epidemics are frequent. The loss of life enormous. 2 babies in every 7 die before they're 1 year old.
Well, gentlemen, what did you wish to see me about?
Thousands of Negroes from the South and West Indies have come to New York and settled in this district. This human landslide is jammed into 3 blocks. They pay exorbitant rent, though they earn very low incomes. The houses they live in are dilapidated, ill-ventilated, vermin-ridden. 2 and 3 families live in 1 room.
Gentlemen, are you prepared to show me evidence of these conditions?
Your Honor, it's common knowledge that these conditions exist. Just walk the streets of our neighborhood, and you'll have all the proof you need.
Well, I cannot act without evidence. And gentlemen, in the future, don't bother coming to City Hall with protests about conditions in your neighborhood until you can bring proof.
But, Mr. Mayor, court records and newspaper reports shriek of violence, disease, epidemics.
Gentlemen, I bid you good day.
Without official interest and support, efforts to change conditions were futile. So, Negroes naturally sought to escape to the more desirable neighborhoods of the city. This began the great trek to Harlem.
Gentlemen, let's get down to business. The landlords refuse to rent apartments to Negroes. We are gathered here in this church to decide what to do. We all want to bring up our families in decent neighborhoods where they can go to good schools and have healthy surroundings.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I move that we form a company, the Afro-American Realty Company, and buy houses in Harlem. It seems to be the most likely place to go. And if the white folks won't rent us, then let's own our own houses. That way they can't borrow.
Oh, but that'll take a lot of money. And we don't have that kind of cash. It means thousands of dollars.
Well, we may not have so much money, but we all have saved up a little for a rainy day. And this is the rainy day. Why don't we pool our savings?
I know, but if we buy a house, will we be able to hold it? People in the neighborhood of Harlem have formed a property owners association so they can bring pressure on banks not to renew mortgages on houses in which Negroes live.
Yeah, he's right about that. Well, I even know a white man who went broke because he let Negroes move into his house. The bank foreclosed on him and took his property.
Gentlemen, please. We're here to do something besides cry about the way we are being treated. Nothing attempted, nothing done is what I always say. Now, if you men will join me, I'll start the ball rolling with $500 for the new company.
I'll match it.
These new-founded realty companies failed. Barely 1,000 Negroes were able to move into Harlem then. Gradually, though, the little colony expanded. It spread. The white residents became alarmed. Soon they threw up their hands in despair. In panic, they fled from the incoming Negroes, as if running from a plague. Harlem had become New York's new black belt. Today, the white community forms a solid ring around Harlem, so rigid that few can move beyond its borders. Within this overcrowded, congested slum corral, Negroes are desperately fumbling for elbow room. They need the air of freedom. Harlem can't hold any more people. Now, let's turn to a family planning to escape from the black belt today.
Why, you.
Hello, Mother.
You're back and safe, too.
And dog-tired. You know, we had a tough trip across the ocean. Sea was rough, and we had to zigzag across to duck the Nazi submarines. But my crew stood up well, Negroes and white alike.
Well, this is your seventh trip, isn't it?
Yes, seven long voyages to the fighting fronts. But our boys need the things we carry, guns and all that. Every successful trip we make shortens the war that much.
Yes. But you look a little drawn, dear. Sit down and rest. I'll fix you something to eat.
Oh, no. Nothing now, Mother. But it certainly is good to get back. Where are the kids?
Out playing. They'll be in soon. You know, dear, the children are awfully proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, I heard Sonny telling another boy that my father is the captain of the Liberty ship, the Booker T. Washington. He's so proud of you.
Sonny is something, I'll tell you. You know, Mother, after this war, and winning it is important to us.
And don't I know it?
Well, after the war, I'm going to settle down on land. Maybe I'll have that house paid for by then.
You still have your heart set on the new house.
Yes, dear. All the way back from this trip, I kept thinking, we're going to settle down in that little red brick house I saw before I left. Oh, by the way, did the real estate agent get in touch with you?
Yes, he did. He told me that everything was coming along fine. But I thought I'd better wait until you return.
Oh, all right, dear. But tomorrow we'll run down and draw up the necessary papers.
It'll be awfully nice to get the children in a better environment.
And you deserve your own home, too.
Why, it's beautiful. I love it, you.
Oh, I'm awfully glad. And you like the red brick front?
Oh, it's perfectly darling.
Well, let's go in.
Yes?
Oh, I'm Captain Hugh Mulzack. This is Mrs. Mulzack.
How do you do?
If you don't mind, sir, I'd like to show my wife the house while we are waiting for the real estate agent. He's due along soon with the papers.
Captain Mulzack?
Yes.
Oh, we had no idea that the house was going to colored people. The agent never said
so. Well, does that matter? You have a sign on the building saying for sale.
Well, we have no objections to your race, but our neighbors would object. We have a sort of understanding among ourselves that no owner in this street would ever sell to Negroes. They say the surrounding property would quickly depreciate.
What nonsense.
Well, don't blame me because you're colored.
To bar Negroes or any other group of people from any neighborhood is not practicing democracy. Now, this is one of the reasons that makes housing for Negroes such an acute problem. The need for a decent place to live exists at every income level. Particularly is it acute among Negroes who could afford to live outside the slum areas. But the opposition to Negroes escaping the black belts is often well organized. This seems to have been the case some 13 years ago when Dr. Errol Collymore, a Negro, moved into a White Plains neighborhood.
Bring the rider closer to the window, darling.
Yes, dear. We're going to be mighty happy here. Certainly glad to get away from those alleys on the other side of town.
Ah, wait till I'm through setting these curtains up.
They're certainly going to look pretty.
Darling, will you mind pulling those shades down, please?
Oh.
Oh, never mind. I'll do it.
Say, sweetheart, who are those men out on the lawn? What are those white things they're wearing?
Where? Let me see. They look like the Ku Klux Klan.
It's a cross they're putting up.
They're lighting it.
Hey, you! Get back where you came!
Get back where you came!
There is a Klan.
Well, now, Mr. Collymore, as president of the bank, I tell you, you've got to move out. These men with me represent the community. We want to settle this question quietly.
Gentlemen, I bought my house with my money that I've earned, and I don't intend to give it up.
But you're forgetting you owe a mortgage on it. If you don't move out, we'll be forced to make it so tough for you, you'd wish that you never heard of White Plains. head of the bank, I can call in your mortgage. You'll lose every dollar you've buried in his house. Well, here's Mr. Jones, member of the YMCA board. He's got something to tell you.
Now, Collymore, I'm going to come to the point. We put you on the YMCA board because we thought you'd set a good example for the other Negroes. But moving into a white neighborhood is presumptuous. Well, we won't tolerate it. Well, first thing you know, all Negroes will want to live here. If you don't get out, we'll throw you off the board.
That's right. We'll force you out.
Mr. Jones, I intend to remain.
Collymore, you're forcing us to take drastic action. There's a meeting tonight. People want to know what you're going to do.
I'm not going to move.
Now listen, Collymore. All right. Don't say I didn't warn you. Fellow members, quiet, please. Fellow members of the Highland Property Association, ladies and gentlemen, I saw Collymore today. That Negro doesn't scare easily. We are faced with a pretty bad situation if he stays in that house. Now we have here tonight a representative group. This is our community, and we must do something about it.
I say let's grab him up! Yeah. Yeah.
Let's make it a
gentleman.
No Negro put his foot in my planes again.
Please, gentlemen, may I say a word?
Gentlemen, quiet, please. Rabbi Goldman wants to say something.
Friends, this is wrong. Very wrong. Dr. Collymore has lived in White Plains since 1930. He is a quiet, cultured man who's been a credit to our community. I've heard every one of you say so on many occasions. He seeks to do for himself and his family what you all are trying to do. He wants to give them the decent things of life. More important, though, is the fact that we live in a democracy which guarantees every man the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Dr. Collymore, in fact, all Negroes, have a right to live where they choose. Beware, you're attempting to violate a sacred right of every man. I ask you to refrain from this lynch spirit.
Well, I don't know about that.
I agree with Rabbi Goldman.
Just a moment, everybody. Reverend Fairley, you wish to say something.
Thank you. I do not think I can add anything to what Rabbi Goldman has said, but I plead with you to end this lynch spirit. Dr. Collymore has a right to live where he wants. Let's respect his rights. For in respecting them, we are safeguarding our own. Let's remember that.
I'm Mrs. Mary Palmore. All I want to say is, can't we at least try to find out how agreeable, decent colored folks can be as neighbors? Let's try.
Well, that's right. Let's do try.
This affair closed amiably. In White Plains, Dr. Collymore resides today in the home of his own choosing, a highly respected citizen of this community. But perhaps that incident is the exception. For often, Negroes have become embroiled in racial conflict of a violent sort. Just recently, Herman Holliday, his wife Augusta, and their 10-day-old daughter moved into an apartment in East Elmhurst, Queens. After tidying up the two bedrooms, a living room, a kitchen, and bath, Holliday left for his night shift job as a mechanic at the General Post Office. At 3 o'clock in the morning...
Baby, what's the matter, baby? Is that smoke coming into the door? I wonder. The house is on fire. I've got to go back and get the baby. Fire! Fire! Somebody help, please!
All right. Get back, everybody. Hey, won't somebody take this girl in? She's got a baby in her arm.
Well, it serves you right. Those Negroes had no business moving in here.
You're Mrs. Holliday, ain't you?
Yes, officer.
How did this thing start?
I don't know, except that the neighbors have been threatening my husband and me since we moved in a few days ago. This is our first attempt at housekeeping. Our new furniture came in just today. Oh, it's all ruined. Who could be this mean? Just because we're colored.
Hey, officer, officer. Hey, you got a jump on this fire?
My paper sent me down for the story.
Well, the house is almost burnt to the ground.
Well, say, who started it?
How should I know? I'm only a cop. You're a reporter.
Okay, okay. Hey, say, lady.
Please, my name is Miss Duane.
Well, Miss Duane, do you know anything about the fire?
The man who let them in that house started the whole thing. He never liked me. I live next door to him. Well, when he left, he did the final spiteful thing. He sold his house to colored people.
Well, it seems like a pretty awful thing to burn down the home of these people. That woman's husband was discharged from the Army 2 months ago, after 2.5 years in the service.
Well, would you like them as your neighbors?
The picture is by no means all black. Great changes have already begun. Public housing projects are the beginning. Now, such housing has, of course, reduced slums. But more has happened. Today, Negroes and whites are living under the same roof. There are more than 20-odd projects in cities like Chicago, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and New York that are occupied harmoniously by Negro and white tenants. How did this enlightening policy come about? Listen to Frank M. Didesheim, Housing Authority Secretary of New York City.
We do not countenance discrimination. We operate in accordance with the principles of the Constitution of the United States. We don't ask the racial identity of tenants. We believe that a housing project should follow the composition of the city, which, of course, includes all races, colors, and creeds.
A southern white family took an apartment in one of New York's housing projects, but expressed some misgivings because Negroes lived next door. 9 months later, the man was saying to the manager of the project,
"We have finally decided not to move. We like the small-town atmosphere. Everyone is friendly, and we get along fine with our Negro neighbors. We play bridge together in the same tenants' club, and we go to the movies together. And we even go out and eat in the same restaurants together. And we get along fine simply because we got to know each other better. I think a whole lot of white folks can learn a lesson by what's happened to me and my family."
Today, we're planning for tomorrow. Mixed housing, where Negroes and whites live together in harmony, should be encouraged. If, as is declared daily, we are fighting a war to extend democracy to all peoples, then we must fall into step and plan for a new and democratic era. Yes, we must wipe out the ghetto in American life.
You've been listening to New World A Coming, written by Roy Otley, starring Frederick O'Neill, as Dr. Collymore, Muriel Smith as Mrs. Collymore, and Alex Scorby as narrator. The program is produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. We invite you to be with us again next Sunday afternoon at 3:03 when New World A Coming will present the story of Tim Jones, sharecropper. You may obtain tickets for this broadcast by writing to station WMCA, 1657 Broadway, Zone 19, New York City. Today's program was based on the theme of Roy Otley's book, New World A Coming, with music by James Lozito, conducted by Jerry Sears. Theme song by Duke Ellington. Your announcer, George Willard. This is America's leading independent station.